We're starting a study of the book of Zephaniah, chapter 1, verses 1, 2, and 3, God's worldwide judgment of idolaters. Unlike the other Old Testament prophets, Zephaniah had a genealogy of four generations, so he was a man of prominence and even of royalty. He offered the prophetic view of the upper class. However, upper and lower class prophets both wrote of judgment and blessing for God's people in the day of the Lord. And the day of the Lord phrase in Zephaniah is used more per line than in any other prophet. It appears more with more consistency than any other one. Zephaniah 1:1-3 opens with God's worldwide judgment that is yet to occur. And we study it for our application. Want to read the verses, and then we'll look at them. Zephaniah 1:1, 2, and 3. The word of the Lord which came unto Zephaniah the son of Cushi, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hezekiah, literally the king Hezekiah, in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah. I will utterly consume all things from off of the land, saith the Lord. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the birds of the heaven, the fish of the sea, the stumbling blocks together with the wicked, and I will cut off man from off of the land, saith the Lord. So, though Zephaniah's genealogy is unique in that it traces his line for four generations back to King Hezekiah, meaning he was of the upper class and likely of the royal line of King Hezekiah, his introductory words, the word of the Lord that came, in verse 1, were used also by the prophets Hosea, Joel, and Micah at the beginning of their books. And Hosea, Joel, and Micah were not of the upper class. They were just regular folks. So men of God, whether they be of lower or upper class, are still men of God. So their message was from God, and they bore his divine authority. Remarkably, though he was a man of nobility, in Judah's upper class, Zephaniah began his prophetic message by abruptly predicting God's final devastating judgment of the entire world. It's interesting. Zephaniah will deal with the judgment of God on Judah immediately, but he also fast forwards to God's judgment at the end time when God is making the entire earth a heap of rubble, so to speak. So though the upper class in Judah would be particularly concerned about maintaining the nation's structure and social order that sustained their way of life, Zephaniah began his prophecy by predicting that the Lord would utterly sweep away everything from off of the face of the whole earth. I remember seeing photographs of Hiroshima after the bomb was dropped there. And what was the other city there? Hiroshima and Nagasaki? And you look at it, it's just, you know, it's like someone had come through with a horrendous stage 21 tornado and just flattened everything. Just a few pieces of buildings standing upright. And, of course, the bombs, the explosions of the bombs, the contamination, the nuclear contamination would have been huge. But this is what it's going to look like on the earth when God gets finished with. In fact, one of the verses says that all the cities fell with a huge, giant earthquake that struck the cities. You imagine all the skyscrapers in New York and Tokyo and London and all of them falling. That's beyond imagination. Well, this divine destruction would extend to life on the land involving men and animals, life in the air involving birds, life in the sea involving fish. What's significant is that this is the reverse order of the creation of Genesis 1, where God created the fish first in Genesis 1:20a, the birds in Genesis 1:20b, livestock and wild animals in Genesis 1:24, and finally man in Genesis 1:26. So the picture here is in taking the order of creation and inverting it. And the emphasis is great. God's going to be going after creation and just pulling up everything by the roots and turning it on its side, so to speak. So God's purpose in destroying all these life forms was his desire to judge the stumbling blocks with the wicked. Now, I know the word stumbling blocks can be translated otherwise, but I take it as stumbling blocks here because of the context in the whole book. The stumbling blocks with the wicked. What as the Zephaniah 1:3b ESV footnote puts, that is the idols, the things that entice a man to sin along with the wicked man himself. That's what Dr. Ryrie is doing. I remember years ago, this is before I had accepted Jesus as my Savior, I thought I would be real holy and start studying a passage that I thought was really difficult. So I picked this book, and I couldn't get beyond verse 3. I couldn't understand, why is God going after fish and animals and things? What in the world have they done? And of course, as an unbeliever, I had no concept of what was going on. Didn't know. So I gave up studying the Bible. I thought it was too difficult. And I thought the most tragic thing about the Bible is they didn't have more pictures in it, because the pictures would make more sense. When I got saved, God gave me a pastor teacher gift, and all of a sudden the Bible made sense. So he was gracious in helping me out there. But anyway, God was going to go after the stumbling blocks. He's going after the idols as well as the idolaters. Well, Romans chapter 1, 18 to 32 in the English Standard Version explains the theology behind this divine worldwide judgment as follows. Though the invisible things of God regarding his eternal power and divine nature are clearly evident from the creation of the world and all of its life forms, sinful men still did not glorify God as the Creator, nor were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, falling into spiritual darkness. That's Romans 1:18 to 21, as you'll recall. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles in the sins of idolatry. Romans 1:22 and 23. So, God gave men over to the impurity of immorality and to the debauchery of unnatural immorality, of homosexuality, and eventually to all forms of great wickedness. That's Romans 1:24 to 32. That should tell you something about our culture today. Our culture today, which is accepting homosexuality, and actually the Congress has voted in codifying same-sex marriage. That's a form of divine judgment, where God is giving people over to that because they've rejected God. God's already in the process of judging our society. He's doing this so that people will dishonor themselves. It's a form of divine judgment. Anyway, accordingly, God's coming worldwide judgment predicted by Zephaniah 1:1-3 will sweep away the idolatrous animal forms man used as a replacement for God, along with sinful man himself, a demolition of creation since man had come to worship what was created in place of the Creator himself. In fact, it's actually stated, Romans 1:25, they came to worship the creature rather than the Creator. So God finally predicted that he would cut off sinful man himself in Zephaniah 1:3c. Now, since God will save the godly remnant and create a new heavens and a new earth populated by that remnant, according to Revelation 21:1 to 22:5, this cutting off of man is not an annihilation of all people, but the destruction of many people on the earth. So he's not doing away with everybody. In fact, the Bible talks about the person who believes will survive the great tribulation, and they're going to do it by faith. But this is going to be really something when God lowers the boom on all of this idolatry. So those that Zephaniah was of the upper class and likely of royal lineage in Judea, a group of people most concerned about the sustainment of the nation's status quo for the preservation of their privileged way of life, being a man of God, Zephaniah still abruptly began his prophecy by announcing God's coming worldwide devastation of the status quo and punishment for man's rebellion against God and his abuse of creation and idolatry. This is something like a senator sitting in the halls of the Senate, the United States Senate, and being called to God to prophesy. And so he prophesies about the absolute destruction of the Capitol building and the White House, okay, and the Lincoln Memorial, and the, you know, goes right down the line. That would be a remarkable thing for any senator to do, but that's what this man is doing. He's boldly talking about the destruction of that which people in his class most wanted to be sustained. So the application is, number one, may we realize that God's true messengers, like Zephaniah, regardless of class and society, all give the same level of truth from the Lord, whether doing so leaves their own class protected or doomed. For God's messengers speak God's unbiased truth. I was thinking also of Jonah. Jonah did not want to go to Nineveh. But the Lord sent him. And so he prophesied there. And that's what God makes sure that his messengers do. And number two, may we depart from all forms of idolatry, what involves using anything in creation as a crutch in place of the Creator. In our Sunday school class last Sunday, someone mentioned about, I think a question came up, I think people might have brought up about how when someone dies, often another person goes through a great depression. Often that happens, and I mentioned this in response to the question, often that happens because a person has made an idol of the person who has died. And when that person has died and left them, they don't know how to live. And they implode. Well, that's why God wants us to look to Him as our God. It's nice to have family members and friends, people around us, but people around us should not be the source of our life and the source of our health and the source of our meaning in life. God must be our source of meaning. He needs to be our God. And number three, may we not view anything in creation as God, but what is intended to be by the Creator, namely God's handiwork, that gives evidence of his eternal power and divine nature, that we might honor and glorify him as God instead of honoring and glorifying what he has created as God himself. One of the things I really appreciate about the Creation Research Institute is they'll have a booklet, they'll send it out, and they'll talk about these plant forms and animal forms and the unique characteristics about them that indicate that there is an intelligent creator. And then they'll give honor not to the items themselves, but they'll give honor to the creator who made these things. In one of the latest books by the Creation Research Institute, they noted how there's a special little flower that's like the form of a cup, and there's a special insect that gets into that and accidentally falls into the bottom. When he falls into it, he gets all sorts of pollen and goo around his feet, and it's very hard for him to get up. But at the top of the flower, there are little stepladders that God has built within the flower so that this insect, even though he has this slippery goo on him, he can get his footing and get out, and he just barely gets out. When he goes out, he lands in another flower, and the pollen from one flower over the next one is what pollinates it. Well, he's the only insect that is the right size to get in there. He's the only kind of insect that can get his footing to get out of that stuff with all that goo and the gooey pollen on his feet. So God created that insect, and he created that particular flower for each other. They couldn't have evolved together. It's a tremendous testimony to the existence of an intelligent designer who made two little things that evolutionists would say did not evolve together. Completely different. One's an animal life form, and the other are plants. And made them so that they have this symbiotic union. And it's to the glory of God. And the Creation Research Institute wonderfully said, this is a tremendous testimony of our Creator God. You're honoring the flower, not honoring the insect, honoring God. And that's what we need to do, honor the Lord.